So imagine you have a radio, one of those old-fashioned radios, not the electronic, but the one where you turn the knob. Those of us who are old enough to remember, we used to have the radio where you had to exactly tune the knob to the dial, to the exact, and then only you got the station clear. Otherwise, you got a lot of static. And depending on the kind of station you tune to, that is the kind of music you get. If you want loud rock music, you can tune it. If you want soft, melodious, gentle music, or if you want to hear devotional hymns. So the choice was yours, and all of that was available, but you had to tune your knobs to the right station. So similarly, today we have coming to the end of the 12th chapter, and it's one of the most beautiful chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, because it's called the chapter of devotion, Bhakti Yoga. And it tells us how to love God, how to reach God. A very clear path is given in this chapter. If somebody reads this chapter, then there is no doubt how I can reach him. He has explained it very clearly from the Lord's own mouth itself. And whether you worship him as a form, as Ganpati or Krishna or Shiva or Jesus, or whether you worship him as the formless substratum of the universe, both the paths are given. So our knobs are tuned to the appropriate radio station we want. So similarly, in this beautiful chapter, the last few verses, the Lord has given us 32 knobs. 32, not one or two. You say, oh my God, one knob is hard enough, 32. But these 32 knobs are 32 values. And basically, they are how to live our life, how to deal with people, how to be calm, how to be devote everything to the Lord, how to make ourselves unselfish, work without ego. So when these 32 knobs are tuned correctly to the Om station, see, our problem is that our knobs are trained to the world, are tuned to the world. I'm running out into the world. I want this, I want that, I want more of this, more of this, more of this. More money, more friends, more power, more position, more house, bigger, all that. You know, we are just running after the world, and that eventually may give you a short-term joy, but eventually it will give you sorrow, because the world can never give you complete happiness. Somebody you love today won't love you tomorrow. Something you had today, tomorrow will break. So we do need to work in the world. We're not saying you don't work or don't acquire, but while working in the world, keep your attention on the Lord, that I'm doing his work or her work. If you worship Mother Durga or Mother Saraswati, I'm doing the Lord's work, and constantly remember. So keep your dials tuned to the Lord, and that is the Om. Here we say, so instead of turning to the world, turn to Om, turn to the Lord. So when your dials are tuned to the Lord, all the 32 dials are perfectly tuned, and such a person is said to be a realized master. Because if you read in this the chapter, it says, Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam Maitra Karuna Evacha Nirmamo Nirahankaraha Samadukha Sukhakshami, and so on and on. The one who does not hate anybody, loves all, is compassionate, has no ego, has no sense of I and my, readily forgives. So these qualities, when you practice them perfectly, if you are 32 and 32, then you are a realized master. But they say, how about you and me? You know, we are still on the spiritual path. So Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says, to the extent you are trying to follow them, even if you have not reached, even if I have not become totally forgiven or forgiving or totally loving or totally without ego, but at least I am on the path. At least I am putting the effort. To that extent, the Lord says, okay, you are doing good. That is all I'm asking you. Because we cannot be perfect. Very few of us can become like Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Guru Nanak or Mirabai. These great saints and prophets showed us the path. So all we can do is, at least in my life, this time I am progressing in this direction. And if you are doing that, the Lord says, you and I are quits. Whatever I have given you, if you have worked your way towards me, that's fine. Even if you don't reach, because in one of the verses he says, Tesha Maham Samudharta मृत्यु संसार सागरात भवामि नचिरात पार्थ मैया वेशित चेतसाम. द लॉर्ड सेज दैट वन हु पुट्स हिज माइंड ऑन मी, इवन इफ ही और शी डज नॉट रीच मी, बट इफ यू हैव पुट द एफर्ट इन माई डायरेक्शन देन इट इज माई जॉब टू लिफ्ट यू अप. So you put your effort and say, God, this is how much I can do. Of course, you don't say that, oh, I don't do anything and say, God, lift me up. No. I put my effort to the best extent and then you say, baki ab tera kaam hai. Now you do it. And he will, because he has promised us in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, you put effort towards me, put your mind on me, I will lift you up and embrace you. So that is the beauty of this wonderful chapter. So these 32 verses, 32 values, these knobs, what I was suggesting even a couple of weeks ago, that what one should do is make a chart, like a flip chart, and write down value number one, Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam, does not hate anybody, Maitra, friendly, Karuna, compassionate, and write them on a flip chart, or if you have a board, write them on there, and then each day, so the first of the month, okay, I should practice this. Second of the month, I should do this. If today is the 12th or 11th, then my value number 11. So each day you make it. So 32 days, there's 30 days in the month, but 32 days. And then when that day, the days are over, start all over again. Okay, now today I have to practice compassion. I have to practice love. I have to reduce my ego. I have to become unselfish. I have to start sharing. So as you practice these, and make that your value of the day, it will change your whole life. That's why I keep saying that this particular 5 or 6 verses, starting from verse number 13 to 19, everybody should memorize. It's only 6 verses. If you can memorize Sanskrit, very good. If not, write it down in English. Actually, Dr. Stafford Betty, who comes to our Thursday class, is a professor at Cal State. He has written the English. And he has memorized them and he actually uses them in his meditation. So the idea is that the more you start living these values, bring them into your life, then only the Bhagavad Gita will become yours. Otherwise, it is just a book. Okay, Bhagavan told it to Arjuna. Beautiful, beautiful. I pray to Bhagavad Gita. I put it on my mantle. Oh, great, great. But that's no help. The Lord did not say the Bhagavad Gita, so you pray to it and put it on the in your puja room. He wrote it, he gave it to us so that we practice it. So this is something you have to apply. So make these values your values, and that's all you need to do. There is nothing else. So that's why this chapter, I would encourage everybody in the summer, read it again and start applying these values. It will change your life. It will make you a new person. That is what all these Mahatmas and these great saints did. So that is all we have to do. So today we'll just do the 20th verse, which is the summary of this 12th chapter. And it kind of, the Lord summarizes, okay, as at the end, having told all this message, today is the last summarizing verse, verse number 20, chapter 12. Yetu dharmyamritamitam यथोक्तं पर्युपासते श्रद्धधानामत्परमाः भक्तास्तेतीव मे प्रियाः. सो भक्ता, भक्ता हियर इज द प्लूरल, ते दीस द लास्ट एंड ऑफ द वर्स, these devotees, ativa, ativa means excessively, me priyaha, they are dear to me. The Lord says, these devotees are excessively dear to me, because we all say, I love God. But does God reciprocate that same feeling for me? So Krishna says, if you practice these values, you are exceedingly dear to me. Of course, the Lord loves everybody, but the one who is closest to my heart is this devotee. These devotees. So what he says, ye means these people, to indeed, dharmya, this religion, what kind of dharmya does not only mean religion, means this teaching, amritam, this eternal teaching of mine, idam. Yatha uktam, yatha means just now I have said, Pari upasate. Par upasate means one who practices totally. Upasate means, of course, one of the meaning of upasana is to pray, worship. But here he means one who practices. Pari upasate means practices totally. Not only mechanically memorizing, okay, Advaishta, Sarvabhutana, Maitra Karu, not like that, but brings it into his life and makes it a part of him, makes it his body, he's living his life according to that, his emotional state is according to that, his intellectual understanding. So every facet of his life, this devotee, one who practices, how should she practice? Shraddha Dhana, with Shraddha, with faith. And Mat Paramaha, and making me the supreme goal. Lord says, make me your supreme goal. Such a devotee is dear to me. This is a very beautiful verse. There is a lot of commentary, but we may not have too much time because we have to go into the main hall for the prayers. So I'll just do a short commentary on it, but you can read it at home. So he says, this Amritam Dharmya Amritam, this eternal teaching of mine. What does he mean by eternal teaching? Because our the Hindu Dharma, the Vedic Dharma is called Sanatan. Sanatan means eternal. That means the Lord himself gave it. And all the religions are actually Sanatan. Even though maybe Christ gave it in the year 2000 or Buddha gave it in 2500 before from now. But ultimately, this knowledge all came from the Lord. So that's what this is said. He says, this is my eternal knowledge, which I have given the Lord himself. That's why in our prayer also, we say, Yada Shiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam. So the Lord is the original teacher from whom all the teachings have come, including down to my guru, like Swami Chinmayananda or Swami Ishwarananda, whom we consider as our guru. Another meaning of eternal teaching, eternal dharma, is that by practicing this, you realize you are eternal. You reach your eternal state. That is another way of interpreting, because in reality, all of us are that consciousness, that the Lord himself has appeared as all of us, because every one of us is a manifestation of that divinity. But identifying with the body, mind, and intellect, I become miserable. Oh, I'm dying. Oh, I'm getting old. Oh, I'm getting sick. Oh, I'm suffering. I'm unhappy. But once you realize your eternal state, then you go beyond that. Then nobody can kill me. That's why in the second chapter also, Krishna tells Arjuna that you are that soul, and the knives cannot cut you, water cannot wet you, fire cannot burn you. Nothing can affect you. And that is, she says, well, what about this body? They say the body is a cloth. You know, like in the 12th, second chapter, he says, just as when there is an old piece of cloth, you discard it. So this body, at the time to leave, you discard it. Then you have no fear of death. And that is called becoming immortal. And those who have practiced meditation, and the deeper they go into meditation, these yogis and all, they say that in their meditation, they go beyond the body. They lose even their body consciousness, that I am this body, they forget. And they, in that depth of their meditation, they experience their innermost soul, innermost self. And they realize that that is my true nature. That is what Raman Maharishi felt when he went in. When he was only about 7 years old, he went into deep meditation and he experienced that. That I am that. And then he spent the rest of his life trying to find what is that state which I experienced at age 7. So as we go deeper in meditation, you experience that and you go beyond the body. And also in any other thing, like suppose you are deep in prayer and you are sitting in the temple or church and you feel your oneness with God, then also you go beyond this body and you realize that God and I are one. I am not separate. So that's why he says, this dharmya amritam idam yatha uktam pariyupasate. One who totally practices it, brings it into his life, studies it, thinks about it, contemplates, and then brings it into his life. Like Thursday we had talked to Armando, he mentioned, how can I bring into practice? It is by when you are convinced of this teaching. You have to be convinced. That's why he says, Shraddha Dhana, you have to have faith in me. And we say, oh, I have faith in God. That is true, but you have to have true faith that what the Lord has said is valid and I have to apply that. So they say, have faith in the Lord, faith in teacher, faith in the scriptures, and then faith in myself. You say, oh, I'm such a useless person. How can I, reach that state of Buddhahood or Jesushood or Shankaracharya? We are all divine. Potentially, we all have that divinity with us. As much as Jesus had, as much as Buddha has, as much I have. So when you have faith and you have true belief that what I believe is right, then and then alone you can progress. Otherwise, you say, I don't think it could be the same thing. Like you want to run a race in the Olympics, or you want to climb Mount Everest, or you want to, may not even be Mount Everest, maybe Mount Whitney, or some project, or you start a business and you say, I don't think I can do it. I'm not good enough. Then you will never progress. But if you have firm faith in your beliefs, in your ideas, then and then alone, the progress is possible. So he says, have a firm faith in your belief. Talking about belief, this Hindu gentleman, he went to Taco Bell and he asked for a bean burrito. And by mistake, they gave him beef burrito. So he bit into it 2-3 times and he was very angry because, he ate that beef. He had already swallowed it. He was very upset that I was given this wrong thing. I'm a vegetarian. So he called a lawyer and he filed a lawsuit against Taco Bell. That, because I ate that beef, I got sick and I have stomach pain and I have nausea and vomiting and diarrhea and all those problems I have because of the beef burrito. So Taco Bell replied, what is the problem? You had nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain? He said, yeah. He said, well, our bean burrito does the same thing. Nothing wrong happened. You would have had the same regardless. Anyway, so here he says, have faith in this teaching, have faith in your belief, and mat paramaha, and make me your ultimate goal. As we said, as I am doing my work in the world, I constantly remember the God, and it doesn't matter whichever form. It's not that one form is superior to another, or one book is superior to another, or one building is superior. Whatever form of God I love, remember, take God to work with you. Or when you're doing your dishes or cooking, I'm cooking for the Lord. Why? Because the Lord is in my children, in my guests. So every activity, make it devoted, and then certain amount of time every day, devote to prayer, to some worship, to some study. And as I find that I start enjoying that, then automatically you'll want to spend more time. Okay, my day's work is finished. Children are put to bed. Now let me sit down and read. Let me sit down and meditate. Let me sit down and do some prayer. Maybe if I have extra time on the weekend, let me go serve the world. So slowly your direction of your thoughts and your actions changes towards the Lord. And then once your children are older and gone to college and all, then you can devote more time. So that's what he says. Initially, you may be devoting less time to me because you have work and you have children, and which is wonderful. Take care of them as me. The child in my house is a manifestation of Krishna. Krishna is there and in this little girl or this little boy. And then as they get older and go to college and they don't need you as much, or once they're in high school and driving, then I have extra time instead of wasting the time in watching TV or just getting on the computer or surfing the net. Or let me spend some time in for myself, for my own spiritual growth. So that's why he says, mat paramaha, make me your goal. Bhakta te ativa me priyaha. He is exceedingly dear to me. What do you mean by exceedingly dear? Why would that be? Swami Chinmayananda tells a very beautiful story. I'll end with that story. He says there was this mother and she had 3 children. One was a girl who was about 7, boy who was about 5. And then there was a little boy who was about 2 or 3 years old. And so she gave them all toys to play with. So they were all playing with the toys, and the little boy started crying. He said, why is he crying, you know? So she goes and yells at the older brother, who's 5. Did you bother him? You know, because you know that, how brothers always bother their little sibling. Said, no, I didn't see anything. Then she asked the sister, did he bother? No, he didn't. I don't know why he's crying. Maybe he's hungry. So she gave him some food and gave to all of them. So the older kids were eating the food and all, some cookies, and they were playing with the toys. The little boy munched on the cookie for a moment. First, he didn't want the toy, you know. He had thrown the toy. Then he gets the cookie, he munches on the cookie. Once he throws it down, he starts crying again. So she comes back, she says, what's wrong? I gave him the toy, he doesn't want it. I gave him the cookie, he doesn't. Why is he crying? Brother, sister said, look, we didn't say anything to him. It's not our fault. Don't blame us. So she says, maybe he's just missing me. So she picks him up in the lap and then goes back into the kitchen. And how mothers, I don't know how they do that, have the baby in one lap and do everything in the house. So she's cooking and working. And the brother and sister are happy, the older one. They are playing with their toys and eating their cookies. So we are, you know, like that. We are like, most of us are like that older brother and sister. We are very happy. You know, we got our toys to play with. You know, I have my little car, maybe a Tesla or maybe or my Ferrari or I have my little house or I have my little jewelry. So I'm very content with that. Oh, I got it. And then we are happy with the food, you know, with the sense enjoyment. Okay, I got my food, my drinks, my happiness, my fun. And so we are happy playing in the world with our toys and food and drinks and travel. And, you know, we are very content. So God says, okay, like that mother, you are content? Okay, you keep playing. But the one child who says, I don't want the cookie, I don't want the toy, I want you. Mother, I want you. And he's crying for the mother. She tries to give him a toy. He says, I don't want it. She tries to give him a cookie. I want only you. Then the mother has to pick him up. And then she takes him in her lap and does all her work. So all of us, most of us are like that two brother and sister who we are very happy. You know, God has given us all these toys to play with, gives us the food to eat and the things and the sense pleasures, you know, all the enjoyments. So we are happy enjoying that. But there are very few people like that little boy. And those are the saints who say, God, I want you and you alone. I don't want all these toys you have given me. I don't want all these sense pleasures. I want you. And then God has no choice. Because he says, I have given you all. He said, I don't need them. You can keep your toys. You can keep your cookie. I want you. And that's what Nachiketa in the Kathopanishad. I think you will be studying that next in the Tuesday class. Tuesday also we have a women's study group that Neeru does from 1 to 2. So if you have time on Tuesday, you should come. But they're going to do Kathopanishad, which is a very beautiful text. And there the student tells the Dharmaraj, the Lord himself, he says, I don't want these worldly pleasures. I want to know the highest truth. And then the Dharmaraj, who is the Lord of Death, has to teach him that knowledge. So that's what they say, that yes, I have my things. I will take care of them. But I will take care of them as a gift from the Lord. Not that it's my house or my car or my child or my money. It is God has given me. This money has been given by him. This house has been given by him. These children have been given. And while I'm taking care of them, I say, Lord, I want you and you alone. And make that your goals. He says, Te bhakta me ativa priyaha. Ativa means they are exceedingly dear to me. So this beautiful verse kind of summarizes that those who practice these values, constantly remember me and bring me into their life, they become dear to me. Why? Because I am dear to them. You see, even the 9th chapter, he says, they are, you know, dear to me and I am dear to them. So it is a mutual attraction. It is a mutual love. And that is how this 12th chapter is very, very nice. It teaches us how to bring ourselves closer to God. We have a couple of minutes if we have any questions or comments. Yes, God is both. God is the substratum, the formless. But then you can also relate to God as a person. Remember, we have talked about how you love God as a person. You can love God as a friend. You can love God as a father, as my master. Some people love God as a child, you know, where they actually have this little Krishna or little Jesus or little Ganpati and they give him food and all. Or you can love God as a beloved, like Mirabai did, like the saints. So you have to develop a relationship, and that can only happen with a personal God, with a God that has human qualities, because everything that is good in the world is him. When you look at love, when you look at somebody exhibiting love or somebody exhibiting compassion or somebody exhibiting service or unselfishness, you say God is there in him. So God personifies everything that is good. That's why when you see a beautiful sunrise or a beautiful sunset, you remember God. And I have given the example of the fireplace, you know, before also, where if there is a fireplace and one who is sitting far away, he'll be complaining, it's cold, it's cold, it's cold. But as you move closer and closer to the fireplace, you feel the warmth. And when you're very close, then you become one with that fireplace. You are completely covered with that warmth. So similarly, God is like that. If you sit far away and say, oh God, you know, you are there in heaven, but you never take care of me, I don't, then he will be far away. But if you get closer to him through prayer, through knowledge, then you will feel his warmth. So it's not that God loves that guy sitting far away as much as he loves the one sitting close. But the one who is far away will not appreciate God's glory and warmth and love. He will not experience it, but the one who is closer to God will experience that. So it's not that he loves the two differently, but the one who is closer to me will feel my warmth. One who is far away won't. And then that child story, you know, the one who wants God will get him. The one who wants the toys will get the toys. Right. Forms. Yes. So the answer to that is that the reason he is unknowable, but out of mercy and compassion, he takes all these various forms. He takes a form as Krishna, as Shiva, as Ganpati, as Mother Goddess, Durga, Saraswati, as Jesus. So all these manifestations are of that one unknowable entity. Because that unknowable entity, you cannot even call it he. It is that, you know, it is. That is that. Cannot be known, cannot be described, cannot be understood. But that entity, which we call as Brahman, or which we call as Father in Heaven or Allah, cannot be described, does not have a form, but that entity takes different forms so that we can develop a relationship of love with that particular form. And once you develop that, then you realize that God is not alone in this form. If you say that God alone is only as Krishna, only as Jesus, then you become a fanatic. And then you say anybody who does not believe in Jesus will go to hell, or anybody who doesn't believe in Krishna should be killed, or anybody who doesn't believe in Allah should be slaughtered. Then those people become fanatics. But when you see that this Jesus or Krishna or Allah or Mother Saraswati that I'm worshipping, Mother Durga, is a manifestation of that totality, of that total Brahman, then you see that this form is actually in reality that total, and they are one. It's not that he's not there in Krishna or he's there in all of them, but he's also beyond all. So you see that God is there in all these forms, but he's beyond it. So through that form you can reach. So that becomes your staircase to reach that highest, which without that it's very difficult to reach. To sit and contemplate upon formless is very difficult. Like directly you cannot jump from ground floor to the second floor, but through the steps I can climb. So that form and the books and the literature and the saints, the teachers, are the steps that take me to that highest, which is unknowable. But through understanding, when that ego disappears, that's why he says that nirmamo nirahankarha. You have neither I or mine. When that I or mine disappears, when that ego disappears, then you become that reality. So all these various paths or various steps or various values are means to dissolve the ego. And once your ego dissolves, then you become a saint. The difference between us and the saint is that saint has no ego. He has no separateness from God. He has no arrogance. He is very modest, very humble. While you and I, if we do something little, we get so proud and we start showing off to the world. But they never they do, and that is the difference. So all this is just to dissolve the ego. So all the spiritual practices are to dissolve the separateness from God. Only thing that separates me from God is my little ego that thinks that I am this little individual called Anil or Barbara or Diane or whatever my name or form. But once you dissolve that, dissolve does not mean you have to die. You just have to understand that the reality is only one. And I am an appearance of that. I am a manifestation. So the form leads us to the formless. It's like from the first grade, how do you go to the 12th grade and then you go to PhD? It's a stepwise. You suddenly cannot have a 5-year-old child or 6-year-old starting PhD studies. You tell them you have to go through 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th grade and then you. So the form is the gateway to the formless. Then you can meditate on the formless. If you can do that, if you can sit and contemplate upon that formless reality and say, I am that, that's wonderful. You don't have to. So you are already evolved. Like Raman Maharishi, he, by age 7, he was already an evolved master. He was already had become one with that. Shankaracharya at age 9 was already, you know, giving talks and writing. And so they didn't need to. But you and I, but if you can do that, contemplate upon the formless, that's wonderful. There's no problem with that. Absolutely. Yeah. If you can do that, and a lot of people have already done that, they are fine. No problem. Yes. You can pick up a stone and say, this is Shiva. And just every day, water and put tilak on it and pray to you, you will see Shiva there. It will appear there. Anything, you can take anything and worship. You can take a plant or a tree. As long as you have total devotion that this is God. Because God is in everything. God is in this glass too. He's there in the water. So that's why a lot of Indians worship the Mother Ganges, the river, as God. Yeah, absolutely. That's why even the books we worship, we actually don't. You know, we don't put our foot on it or, you know, So that God is there, especially the spiritual book. Actually, all books, you know, in India, any book, we never put our foot on it because book is Mother Saraswati. It is knowledge. So represent that everything is God. Yes, that's true. No. This whole thing. But yeah, in this case, he refers to verses 13 to 19. But what he's talking about is the eternal, is the totality, the total Bhagavad Gita, yes. But here, when he says yatha means these 20 verse, 32 verses that I have described. But ultimately, it is the whole teaching. But what he's doing is he's summarizing this particular chapter, ending that. And now he will start a new chapter, which we will start in end of August when we meet again. We'll start chapter number 13. Okay, we'll just do the closing of this 12th chapter. If you can just chant after me the last few lines. Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gitasu Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Bhakti Yoga Nama Dvadasho Dhyayah. So Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat are God's names. Om, of course, represents the total reality. Tat means that. That consciousness, whom we consider as that somebody far away, but it is Sat, it is existence. I am existing because of that. This table is existing because of that. This glass, this book, everything exists. So that existence, iti, thus, So that God who has been described in this Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gitasu, in this Srimad means I respectfully worship this Bhagavad Gita, this book, Upanishadsu, and it is an Upanishad because the Bhagavad Gita is the summary of the Upanishad, so gives me the highest knowledge. And it says Brahma Vidyayam, and it is the Brahma Vidya, it is the highest knowledge. Why? Because it is a yoga shastra. Shastra means the teaching of yoga. Yoga does not mean just the physical exercises. Here yoga means to unite. It teaches me how to unite with God. And what is the Bhagavad Gita? It is Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvada. It is the conversation but between the Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna. And that conversation is the Bhagavad Gita. And what is this chapter called? Bhakti Yoga Nama. It is called Bhakti Yoga. So this chapter is Bhakti Yoga Nama. And it is Dwadasho Dhyaya. It is the 12th chapter which I am concluding. So that's what we have concluded, the 12th chapter. It's really one of the most beautiful chapters. I really enjoy doing it. I want to thank you all for giving me this opportunity. Every Sunday I feel so blessed that I can share this knowledge with everybody. I would just ask, let everybody read the first verse all together. That means that we are pledging that the rest of that, that we will read all the 20 verses again. So I'm not going to end today, okay, 12th chapter ho gaya. It's finished, 12th chapter, now let's go to 13. No, in the summer I'm going to read this again. So we can read the first verse together. Arjuna uvacha. एवं यू वांट एवं सतत युक्ताये भक्तास्त्वां पर्युपासते ये चाप्यक्षरम अव्यक्तम् तेषां के योग वित्तमाहा